Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we'll go back in time to seasons past, when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain that would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats Football History and its Memorabilia on the Gridiron Greats Publishing and Broadcasting Network, in conjunction with Slick Enterprises. We're live from the Wallingford, Connecticut home of Gridiron Greats Magazine. And I'm Bob Slick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America which focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 150-plus years of football history and memorabilia, and you can find us on the web at Gridiron Greats Magazine. It is at this time I'd like to introduce my co-host, who is a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Largent. He hails from Portland, Oregon, Mr. Joe Squires. Joe, welcome to the show.
Bob, good afternoon. How you feeling today? Your football trailed off a little bit. Usually get about a good 5-6 seconds out of that.
Well, the excessive amount of pollen in the air here, I have a little allergy issues. So long story short, I will be clearing my throat several times through the show. I have lime water in front of me trying to keep my voice going for 60 minutes of football talk.
Outstanding.
Hey, before we get started on what we were going to talk about, something came to my mind that I'd like to share with our audience. I'm sure everybody's aware of the show American Pickers, where two guys drive around the country and they basically pick different antiques and different pieces of items of collectible nature from throughout the country, amazing collections and debris and hoarding that they go through to find stuff. So a quick story I just want to share with the audience, and you, Joe, too. In the local Craigslist, I normally read the tag sale ads every week. So there was an interesting one this week which said collectibles tag sale 12 to 5 p.m. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Please email me first if you're going to attend, blah, blah, blah. So I emailed the guy. I said, I'd like to swing by on the way home from work. He said, sure, I'm here, blah, blah, blah. So I knew where the address was. I was on the way home, town over from where we were. So he says, walk in the back of the house and come through the Bilco door. So that's exactly what I did. I go down to the
I hope you text. I hope you told Brenda. I hope you told Brenda where you're going to be, just in case you got kidnapped.
She says that all the time. She says, I can't believe some of the stuff you go, you know, You're just not fearful of anything. And I said, you know, if you're going to do something like that, as far as I'm concerned, you're foolish to try it with me. That's all I got to say. So anyways, I walk into the guy's basement, and literally from the top of the ceiling to the bottom of the floor, he had all sorts of collectibles, cards, programs, magazines,
wow,
records, comic books, you name it, he had it. And I think my mouth must have dropped to the floor when I walked in, and I had told him I'm only interested in football, and I prefer older football, 1979 and back. So I said, I'm the guy who, and he said, oh, yeah, okay, yeah. I pulled what I was able to find easily for you to look at. So in this room that literally had from top to bottom, you name it, it was there. And he said he collected more baseball than anything else. He only had a little football. I go in, and I it's about 50 cards in a pile. He shows me. There were some 1961 Topps football, a handful of 1971 Topps game football, like one or two 57s, one or two 66 Topps, a couple of Fleer Hall of Fame from the 70s, and a couple other odd cards, nothing out of the ordinary. Condition was everywhere, gem mint to VG. So I go through them, and I'm saying to myself, oh, what am I going to do with this now? And I really feel sorry for the guy because it looks like he's got a couple hundred years accumulation here he's trying to sell. So he was telling me, I'm retiring. I'm trying to get rid of all this. I'm moving, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, you got a lot of stuff to sell. He said, yeah, I know. That's why I'm running this sale every weekend for the next few months. So long story short, it reminded me of American Pickers. And I really felt bad for the guy, so I couldn't not make him an offer on the cards. So I said to him, well, what are you looking for these football cards? He says, I trust you. Just make me a fair offer. I know you got to resell them or whatever. You know, just make me a fair offer. So there were 50. I counted 52 cards. So I said, well, would you take $25 for them? Oh, yeah, that's more than fair. That's more than fair. So I gave him the 25, and I climbed up out of the Bilko door again, and I drove home. But it was actually a pretty interesting pick. There were a couple of the 61s were nicer shaped than what I had in my collection, so I upgraded a few. And it was just what an experience. I think I was just in awe, just staring at everything there. How could anybody fit
yeah.
all that in a cellar? It just amazes me to no end. Amazes me. I felt good about.
I'm not
the way my man came.
I'm not sure if you looked, but did he have any largents?
No, I did not see any largent laying around, but I got two 1978 O.J. Simpson cards, which I will advertise for sale at the National. I know somebody will want to buy them, but it was funny. What an experience.
He probably had all the largents in a safe in the back.
I'm sure. I can't figure out how you would walk in the back to get at them. That was the problem. So,
you look a little suspicious, Captain. Captain, if you'd have been a little calmer, a little cooler, he might have let you in back to see the good stuff. Hey, you want some large and rookie gods? I got some stuff in the back. I got some large and.
He'll email me again. He said, "Well, I found a bunch of cards from the 1800s, but a couple of them don't have any names on them. I don't know if you would be interested in them." And he said some sort of tobacco card. I can't figure out what they are.
By the way, anyways, Bob, perfect segue from the last show, where it's just like you keep waiting for some hoarder to.
Yep.
I love it. Well done.
Yep.
You know, I'm too organized to be a hoarder. I'm that guy who, you know, about every year and a half, 2 years, goes through my collection and just goes, nope. I know I've been working on collecting a 52 Bowman small set for like 6 years, and I'm 80% of the way through it. You know what? Nah, never mind. That doesn't interest me anymore. Let's sell that off. I'm just that guy. I lose interest,
But
I'm kind of happy.
But I've always lost interest in, and I put it together three different times, never finished it. It was the 35 Chickles. I just gave up on him. I just got tired of it. I couldn't see spending $300-$400 on a GBG common high number. You know what I mean? It just wasn't worth it. Just wasn't worth it to me. So
blasphemy! Blasphemy!
I can't do it. Can't do it. That's it. But anyway,
call yourself the ambassador of football, and you can't put together a Chickle set. Oh, captain. All right.
But we are in another trimmed, graded card crisis. Hand off to you, Joe, pull us up.
It's so depressing. And the irony of it all, just, you trust these third-party graders to, to be looking at cards. And I've mentioned before, my love-hate relationship with the 48 Leaf set, and just I'm enamored by the set, and I love it. And just at some point I began to realize trimmed cards were slipping by, the graders at PSA, and you start seeing obviously trimmed cards, getting holdered as PSA 8, and they're just the minimum width and height, 50 millimeters by 60 millimeters, a 60 by 70, just not happening. It's just depressing. And then every once in a while somebody will point out another card that's for sale, and it just kind of makes me shake my head. But apparently PWCC had some trimmed cards up for sale. Somebody talked about them, and then they got pulled.
And there were newer cards, too, apparently. There were
newer,
one was Tom Brady or a few Tom Bradys or whatever.
Yep. And it's got to be harder to trim those, because if it's a numbered 1 to 1,000 card, and somebody's got a scan of a PSA 9, number 72 Tom Brady contender card, and you buy that, and the PSA 9 had an obvious dent in the top, and it appears 6 months later, number 72, without the dent, missing a 64th of an inch, on top. It appears in a PSA 10 holder. It's pretty damn obvious it's been trimmed. But the problem is there's no recourse for that. You send a scan of the old PSA 9, with a dent in it to PSA along with the new scan. It's not like they're going to buy the card on eBay and then take care of it. It's gone at that point. And, it's not like you're going to reach out to PWCC, tell them this came from a 9, it's obviously trimmed, and he's going to pull the listing. I'm not familiar with that listing, but did that one get pulled? I just knew about a couple of Leaf cards that were trimmed.
Yeah,
I believe
it was like four cards that actually got pulled, or three or four cards. And long story short, that basically put a kibosh to what was going on there. I mean, you're looking at ridiculous prices for those cards, 100K plus in a couple of situations. It doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't. It does not make any sense to me whatsoever with regards to that. So that's major, major problem that I see as far as what we're looking at with regards to our, the hobby, to say the least, as far as all this trimming is concerned. So,
and the modern cards are much easier to trim than the vintage ones, because the way the modern ones cut, they have a blade with rollers on it. So it's not like there's a sharp edge. The edge has a slight bevel to it. So, I've witnessed card doctors trimming, a 64th of an inch off. And literally, when they take a trimmer to it, the cardboard that comes off in little curly cues, because it's so thin. And then they put the card in a top loader, and then they literally ran a socket wrench over the top of it to add that bevel. And they put it in a top loader so that it didn't, indent the cardboard or get rid of the gloss. So they just ran a crescent wrench on the side, and that got the bevel. And, even modern-day cards, a 64th of an inch, if you held your calipers up to it, you're gonna assume that's within tolerance. In other words, it's hard for the graders to know it unless they go, wait a minute, card number 72, let's see if we've ever graded this before. And I don't know if PSA keeps scans of every card they grade. I don't know if they have the bandwidth to do that.
It's just, you know, you figure with a literally such a wealthy business market, multi-million dollars worth of cards are passing through people's hands, and there's just not a better way to check what's going on as far as greeter cards. And again, it's my argument all along. I don't do much of anything with greeter cards. I'm not pleased with what I'm seeing or reading and hearing about in the market with greeter cards. They really need to clean their act up once and for all. It's not fair to the collector. It's not fair to the hobby. And it's not, most of all, it's not fair to the unsuspecting individuals who are putting out this kind of money to buy a trimmed card in a supposed special grade or high grade holder.
Yep.
It's ridiculous to me. Totally ridiculous.
It just bothers
me to no one.
You know, but what do you expect for a $15 to $20 grading fee? I mean, they can't.
Right. Right.
I would imagine there's just not enough time to scan each card, keep a database of each thing, and then if you do get a numbered card like a Tom Brady 72, number 72 contender, I mean, how do you go back and check your beta database to see if you've ever graded card number 72? It's not enough. I mean, and will the market bear, you know, a sliding scale for grading where it's like, all right, a normal card, you know, if you want to send in a 2005 Donruss card, I mean, it's $15. If you want to send in an incredibly valuable card like a 1977 Steve Largent, I mean, that's $100, you know. I mean, just
right,
a sliding
right.
scale just for a little more objectivity, you know, to a grade. I don't know. I tend to slab stuff nowadays just to protect it and to label it for future. You know, not for grading. I'm not after a PSA 10 Red Grange ticket from a game in 1925. I'm just after getting it slabbed so it doesn't get damaged and lost.
Right. I hear you. All right. Our special guest is here, and I'd like to introduce him. He has an incredible collection of over 8,000 Pittsburgh Steeler cards and memorabilia items. His collection will be featured in the summer national issue of Gridiron Greats magazine as our super collector.
Yes.
He hails from Idaho. I'd like to welcome to our show Mr. Michael Herman. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. I'm enjoying your conversation so far. I hope that your other guest won't hold it against me that I'm a Steeler fan. Sometimes Seahawk fans out here are a little resentful of the Steelers, but...
I've got notes jotted down, Mike. Don't you worry.
Okay.
I still, to this day, Pittsburgh Steelers. To this day, I still spell Pittsburgh Steelers, Steeler.
Oh, man. that's pretty much the consensus out here.
Let's start off by asking you and telling our audience, how did you become a fan of the Steelers and how you started collecting Pittsburgh Steelers cards and memorabilia?
Well,
did you lose a bet, Mike?
What's that?
Did you lose a
bet? No,
I
didn't lose a bet.
Had to become a Steeler fan? Okay.
I was born into it. I was born like 25 miles northwest of Pittsburgh in a town called Monaca, Pennsylvania. So I didn't really grow up there. I've actually grown up all around the country in different places, but it just, you know, like anything, I just kind of consider it my heritage. And my grandfather and my favorite aunt and my dad, of course, were big Steeler fans. So it's just always one of those things that you just look back on and, you know, with fond memories. I grew up mainly in Ohio, which, you know, and I grew up in the Columbus area, which is kind of halfway between Cleveland and Cincinnati. So I got into quite a few fights as a kid, but I remained loyal to the Steelers. Yeah, there was always, and, you know, when I grew up in the mid-70s and 80s, there was also the Cowboys. I find that wherever I go, there's Steeler fans. I mean, even out here in Idaho. But,
yeah.
Yeah,
I was gonna ask how old you were. I mean, what era you grew up in? If you grew up in the 70s, you know.
Yeah, I'll turn 53 next month, so I kind of grew up in the heyday of the Steelers for sure. Although they've been pretty consistent since then, but yeah, I've always loved the Steelers, and I've always kind of been a collector at heart. You mentioned American Pickers. I mean, I love shows like that. You know, I'm interested in people's collections and collecting. I mean, I like to focus mainly on, like, oddball, regional issues, things like that. That's one reason why I really enjoy your magazine. You know, there's a lot of good articles in there along those lines and dealing with things like that. When I put down I have 8,000 items in my collection, I'm probably being really, really conservative. I mean, I probably have close to that.
Wow.
I probably have close to that many just football cards, not counting everything else. And you know, it's funny as a collector, I can remember even where I got a lot of those stuff, even as a child. You know, I can still remember where I accumulated part of my collection and stuff.
Nice. Do you just collect Steeler stuff, or I mean, any other hobby or any other teams or anything?
I used to collect everything, but, you know, I sold off a lot of it just to kind of support my habit. Occasionally I'll pick up some pirate stuff. And like I said, I really like the oddball stuff. So if I see something, like recently I saw some Burger Chef cards, and they were actually Cincinnati Bengals. I couldn't resist the price. I thought, you know, that's such a rare regional thing. So if anybody comes over, I'll just hide them somewhere. But...
Yeah. Don't worry. A couple of years from now, Bob will be in your basement, stepping through a Velcro, door, looking at your stuff.
Yeah, it would take a lot for me to spell, but unless it was a double.
Another 5-6 years of the Steelers not winning, and you know.
Well, you know.
Well, I don't know if that's going to happen, but I'm loyal to
kidding,
the end.
I always tell
people if they never win another game, they're still my favorite team. I just don't like people jump from team to team, you know.
Totally.
I think teams that are hot for periods of time obviously will gain new fans, but there are a lot of them are fair weather fans, and you really look at hardcore collectors, like somebody like you with the Steelers, me with the Packers, Joe with the Seahawks. You know, there's a lot of lean times, there's a lot of good times. So, you know, if you're a fan, you're gonna ride out the storm no matter what it is. I look back to the 60s for me when I was young growing up, the Packers were the team, and I also had the local flavor of Bob Saransky, who was from Derby, Connecticut, and the local New Haven paper would literally every other day had an article on Saransky or the Packers or whatever, which was cool. So it really sparked my interest with the Packers. And at the same time, Broadway Joe Namath was becoming big with the Jets. So that added a lot of flavor to it at the same time, and the rivalry between the two leagues, so on and so forth. But I really think there's a lot of fair weather fans, and there's the hardcore fan, and I'm more worried about the hardcore fan than I ever be with a fair weather fan, to say the least.
Well, like
my grandfather,
the NFL had a. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, I was just going to say my grandfather was a big Joe Namath fan. He actually knew the Namath family. He had a bar in Beaver Falls, so, and one of my uncles, he played football against Joe Namath and baseball. He said Joe was a great baseball player.
Wow, didn't know that. NFL, like 5-6 years ago, had a, the top items that sell on their website, you know, for teams. And they refer to it as the Big Five. There are five teams that are, like, far and away the number one most followed teams, you know, in the country. And it's always consistently the Cowboys, the Steelers, the Packers, the Raiders, and I think the last one was the Patsies, but I don't remember. And it's just there's people who flutter in and out of liking a team, but then there's the stalwarts, a lot of it's in that Midwest where it's just you're born in the area, you watched your team, you rooted for your team, and you are a fan. You are a lifelong fan. I'm a lifelong Seahawk fan. I mean, my parents had season tickets in 1977, and I went to my first game when I was 9 years old. And, you know, So I'm kind of in the same boat as you, Mike.
I do have to agree with you. If there's one guy that I respect in the NFL that wasn't a Steeler, it would be Steve Largent. I think he's definitely a class individual and a good football player.
All right, man. You got me.
Maybe you'll start
about
my
four. Damn it. I had about four more jokes lined up. Never mind. I'm going to cross those off.
All right. I got one.
I got one
for you, Chase, but
now I can't make fun of you anymore. Shoot. All right. It's kind of weird. I've just bumped into my first classy Steeler fan. All right.
Oh, wow.
I'm kidding. You complimented my childhood hero.
You know why Spokane can't have an NFL franchise? Because then Seattle will want one.
Oh, shoot.
Wow.
So, and you're in Idaho. You're in Idaho, so you're really close to Spokane there, so that's not bad. I'm in Portland, Oregon. So we're not too far away, Mike.
Not too far.
So we could just sit here and trade, you know, football insults the whole show, I think. I think we got enough.
But we don't want to do that. So.
No. Mike has, you know, chosen the high road. He went classy. He gave a compliment to the Seahawk great, Steve Largent. So I'm good to go. I'm happy.
All right.
Mike, you collect Steelers stuff. We always have this question. It's like, I mean, out of 8,000 items, and you mentioned mostly just football cards, what are your top, like, five items in your collection that, like, if there was a fire, you would grab before running out of the house?
Well, the first two, I think, are definitely easy, you know, but the rest of them, you know, there's, like, how do you pick a favorite child? But I would say my number one favorite item, I would say, I have a autographed Art Rooney Christmas card that somebody had given me, a friend of mine had given me, and I don't think there's a more classy individual that ever lived in the NFL than Art Rooney. You know, I really admire him. You know, those commercials, the talkies, I think he's the original most interesting man in the world. He just, the things he did and in his lifetime, the things he accomplished, I mean, he was a Olympic level boxer. He was a semi-pro baseball player. He got scholarship offers for football. I mean, and he owned the greatest franchise ever. So how can you go wrong?
Classy guy. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. One thing, I have several books about Art Rooney, and one thing that really impressed me are stories about his funeral. You know how the Steelers and the Raiders definitely were arch enemies, especially in the 70s. And, you know, anybody who knows anything about Al Davis knows that, you know, he's definitely a person that could have held a grudge. But, you know, Al Davis was at Art Rooney's funeral. I mean, that to me just speaks of the classiness of the man. You know, he was just so well-respected and so well-loved. I mean, and I definitely know the autograph is authentic without ever getting it, you know, authenticated, just because he's not the kind of person that would have somebody signing an autograph for him. So I would definitely say that's my number one favorite item.
Rooney helped a lot break the color barrier in the NFL too. So.
Oh yeah, definitely. He treated everybody equal. Another thing that he would do that, you know, a lot of people would never even think of doing is he even took members of his grounds crew to the Super Bowl. I mean, what owner does that, you know?
Right.
I mean, these are
right.
people that, you know, work on the field, and he would randomly take members of the grounds crew to the Super Bowl so that they could experience it. Definitely
wow.
a classy individual.
You said it's a Christmas card?
Yeah, it's a Christmas card. I think without going in the room and checking, I think it's probably it's the early 80s. I think he died in 88, if I remember correctly. So it's an early 80s Christmas card. So,
how very
yeah,
cool.
just somebody gave it to me. You know, a lot of things in my collection have been gifts. I would say my next favorite items are my Steeler Tops Mexicans. I mean, that was one set that was
awesome.
Pretty hard to put together.
That's a toughie.
Yeah, and again, you guys were talking about graded cards. I mean, some of them are graded, but that's not really important to me. I just wanted to have the cards. I mean, I'm a collector. I'm not looking to resell them.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked quite a while, you know, bidding on them, and a lot of them I would lose and stuff. But I got a hold of a guy who had completed a whole set of the Topps Mexicans, and he had doubles and everything, and he sold me a few at reasonable prices, which I thought was really cool. So that's probably those are probably my two favorite.
Wow.
I wrote down a couple. What's that?
Those are tough, man. Those are tough.
Yeah.
Anything about Mexican.
Another item, probably my favorite all-time Steeler is Terry Bradshaw. So, you know, I got a lot of different Terry Bradshaw items in my collection. I just recently was able to get the St. Louis Market Com Terry Bradshaw, which I had been looking for quite some time, and I'd never even seen offered on eBay, but I saw it a few months ago, and I was able to get that at a pretty good price. So I have the Sears Roebuck, you know, which is kind of rare, too, because of the NFL strike that year. You know, they basically discontinued them, but some of them got out into circulation, and then I have the regular one also. Another couple things that I found recently, you know, just trolling eBay every once in a while, you discover stuff, but I found some 1972 DEA posters. And the first one I got, Frenchy Fuqua, who's another one of my favorites. Not really sure why, other than Immaculate Reception, but the first football card I ever remember acquiring was a 1974 Frenchy Fuqua, and I just randomly found it, you know, as a kid, and just kind of stuck in my mind. And then I also have the Andy Russell 72 DEA poster, so.
Right.
Those are, you know, something I've been working on trying to find some information about. I do believe I've seen pictures of a Terry Bradshaw one and also a Joe Green one, but I've never seen them offered or anything. So.
Yeah, that's,
oldest,
that's an interesting.
What
that's an
that?
Interesting oddball set. That's an interesting oddball set. Ed, and when you had mentioned it in the article, I went back into my notes. I have nothing on it. I know I've heard of it, but I've never actually seen them. So, but if you got two of them, you know, who knows how many are actually in the set. But Ed, I would say it's only a handful. I wouldn't say it's a big set.
Right, and those two guys happen to be two of my favorite, you know, old Steeler players. So, you know, and being in 1972, other than Bradshaw, they were probably like the face of the franchise, you know, at that time.
Right.
How old did your collection go back, Mike, if you don't mind me asking? I mean, most of the stuff you mentioned is pretty modern.
Yeah, I collect a lot of, I mean, I still need a lot of the, you know, the pre-World War II and the after-World War II kind of stuff. But I do have, you know, I have some older Bowman, some older Tops. But, you know, I just kind of focus, you know, like any collector, you get focused on certain things. But, you know, I collect anything Steelers. I still collect modern cards. I mean, but I prefer the older stuff. Probably the 60s and the 70s is what I prefer the most. But, you know, I go all the way back. Anything I can accumulate that's Steelers, I mean, I'm easy to buy for at Christmas time. so if anybody ever is wondering what to buy me, they can just anything Steelers. So another set that I've been kind of working on that I'm having a little bit of hard time finding information about is the 72 hand cuts. I don't know if you guys are familiar with those at all. But I think they were probably. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's another one I you know, I've heard of. I have absolutely no information on whatsoever. So.
Yeah, I can't really. You know, I not too long ago, a few months ago, I saw like a lot, advertised, and I bought it, and I emailed the guy. He didn't really have a whole lot of information on it either, but it helped me, you know, fill a lot of the collection. And I have no idea even how many cards are in that, but I probably have, you know, 30 or 40 of them easily. So, and, you know, there's a lot of them that I don't have, the more expensive ones, because most of the ones you see offered online are graded cards. But I was able to get a pretty good-sized lot of ungraded ones and doubles and stuff. So I just think those are real interesting because that's a real interesting time in the Steeler franchise, you know, right before,
absolutely,
you know, they started going to the Super Bowl. And, you know, there's players on there that I've never seen or heard of. And I consider myself, you know, a pretty good authority on the Steelers. I mean, I definitely read everything I can get a hold of, and, you know, I've been collecting for a long time. So I'm interested in those, you know. Also, I just recently completed my 1974 WTAA 8x10 poster set. I don't know if you guys have seen those. Yeah,
yep.
I looked really hard for the Ray Mansfield one, and I finally found it. I never saw it offered online under WTAE, but I was just looking, you know, through Ray Mansfield stuff, and they happened to have shot of the front and the back, so I was able to. They didn't have it advertised, is what it was, but, you know, I was able to snag it. So those are probably my top five or six favorites at the time, or at the current rate.
Well, tying that up, what's on your want list right now? If anything that you're looking for, do you have a priority want list, or just, you know, generalized or whatever?
Yeah, I do have a couple sets that I'm definitely wanting to try to fill. It's a lot of coins. I still need the Buddy Dial, and I need the Gene Lipscomb, Big Daddy Gene Lipscomb. So, again, you know, looking on eBay, I'll come across Buddy Dials here and there, but the only Gene Lipscomb I've ever seen offered is, like, you know, real, like, 10, you know, Gem Mint 10, which is like $1,300 or something, you know, definitely out of my price range. But, you know, those are two coins I would definitely like to get a hold of. also, I'm working on my J publishing set. I don't know if you guys are familiar with those.
Yeah. Those seem to be, certain years seem to be more plentiful than other years. And then it's always the classic question, well, how many were actually issued by the team? Was it 10, 12, 15?
Right.
You know, that kind of situation. And because it was a J publishing set, it could be 10, it could be 12, it could be 15. You know, years later, collectors found one or two that weren't, you know, were never in the original set, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, how did they get out to the market, so on and so forth. So those could be a tough set to finish in the long run, because you really don't know,
right,
you know, what might be out there one way or the other, you know.
As far as I know what I need, you know, I've seen complete sets offered and whether that's a complete set or not, but I need the Lou Michaels, the Bobby Lane, and the Preston Carpenter. Those are the three that I'm missing out of those sets. So another set I'm working on, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the IDL Steelers.
Oh, yeah.
Set.
No, what's that?
I'm short about seven or eight cards.
Yeah, it was, I think IDL stands for Independent Drug League. They were, from what I've read online, they were like independent pharmacists, and they're, I don't know, you said you had some, Bob, right? I'm not sure the size.
Right.
They're probably around 5x7s,
like
I would say.
Yeah, I was going to say they're roughly 5x7, so.
And they're
a photograph.
Again, you'll see them on eBay,
yep,
but very rarely are there more than the ones that are always on there that nobody's bought. You know,
occasionally
I've seen some full sets offered. I think I'm like six short there. So.
Okay. And I guarantee one of them you're short on is the, I think it was a Bradshaw that no one's ever seen.
Jim Bradshaw?
Yeah.
It's Jim Bradshaw. Yeah.
And,
no relation, but, yeah.
I've seen, like, one of them over the years, and that was it. And that, for whatever reason, I don't know if it was pulled, never distributed, who knows? I don't know.
That is one of the ones I need. Yeah, I think I got written down. I need the Lou Cordialone, Buzz Nutter, which I have seen, John Rieger and Mike Sandusky, and Dick Hoke, which...
Okay, all right.
Those are pretty much
what a lot of people are looking for. Yep.
Yeah, occasionally you'll see a full set offered, but, yeah, it's very rare that you'll see very many different individuals. Like the Ernie Stodner and the John Henry Johnson, the two stars out of that set, you know, you see all the time offered, but, you know, as far as the rarer ones, they're the harder to find. So...
Mm-hmm.
All these years of collecting. Oh, no. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
Go ahead.
Another set you're working on. What do you got?
Well, I don't. It's not a big set. I don't know if you guys have seen the Frozen Coke, the Icy's. I think they were put out in 72 also. Yeah,
right.
I have the Frenchie Fuqua and the Andy Russell, of course. The only one I don't have that I know of is the Terry Bradshaw. And, of course, that's the big money shot there, but that's definitely what I'm looking for. So, from what I understand, I think they were put out in the Miami area, if that's right, just like a very regional type set.
Yeah, it was definitely a regionally distributed set, and it had very, very poor distribution in the region. So they are exceptionally difficult to find. All the shows I've been to over the years, and I've seen maybe one or two of them over the years, and that's it. You know, I really haven't seen much. And then, you know, a place like a show like a National, you're still going to be hard-pressed to try to find anybody who may have them. And if they do have them, they know what they got, so it's going to be a good chunk of change to buy anything.
Yeah.
But
it's
an interesting set. Interesting. So.
Yeah, that's definitely one thing. I try to remain disciplined when I go after stuff. You know, I mean, I'll put my bid in. If I don't get it for what I get, then, you know, I mean, there's nothing that I, you know, if I die tomorrow and I don't have, I'm, you know, not going to say I lived an unfulfilled life. I mean, you know, I enjoy my collection, but, you know, you got to also kind of operate on a budget too. So those are probably the things that I'm looking for the most, but, you know, like you said, you just see things pop up all the time. You had no idea we're there, and you're off for something else. I mean, it's just fun to collect to me. You know, it's something to keep yourself stimulated. I call it my Steeler Museum. I have a room in my house, and, you know, before I go to bed every day, I'll just walk in there and kind of breathe it all in. You know, enjoy my collection. So.
That's cool.
Definitely a lot of things I've worked for and looked for and hunted, and that's the fun thing, you know, the hunts. I mean, when I was younger, you know, it was more flea markets and card stores and stuff, but now with eBay, it definitely makes it a little easier.
Without a doubt. So, I mean, all this stuff you collect, you know, 8,000 items and, you know, coming up on, you know, but sounds like decades of you know, assembling your collection. You know, do you have any good stories bumping into someone chasing John Stallworth down a, you know, down an airport, you know, corridor for an autograph, anything like that?
No, I've never really run into any Steelers in live, except I did when I was. Again, when I was a kid in Columbus, there was a charity basketball game between the Bengals and the Steelers, so I was able to get some autographs there. But, no, probably my favorite collecting story is one that I kind of torture my two older sisters with. So when the article comes out in the magazine, I'm going to buy them a copy and send it to them. I haven't told them that I included them in my article, but we were riding our bike I grew up in a suburb of Columbus, which is called Westerville, and there's a reservoir there, and you could walk across the reservoir or ride your bikes or whatever. It was definitely kind of out in the country. The closest thing around was a bait store. That's how, you know, that's how out in the country it was. But we were riding our bikes to the bait store, you know, to get whatever kids get. And as we were getting ready to cross the dam, I saw this garbage bag open, and I looked inside it, and it had, who knows, thousands of sports cards in it, you know, baseball, football, everything. And, of course, you know, being the younger brother, I'm 5 years younger than one and 4 years younger than the other, you know, I had to listen. They were like, oh, we'll get it on the way back. Don't worry about it. Just leave it there. It'll still be there. And, of course, on our way back, it was gone. So I torture them story all the time.
Oh, wow.
Who knows what could have been in there, you know? I mean, that was definitely the, you know, early to mid-70s. I mean, you know, who knows what, you know, how many thousands of dollars could have been inside that bag.
Wow.
You know, it's just the one that got away. You never know what could have been in there.
It's funny you mentioned you haven't talked to any dealers. Like 10 years ago, Franco Harris was playing in a charity golf tournament here in Portland, and I was golfing in the cart behind him. And so, you know, every time he was teeing off, you know, waiting for, you know, for the rack and stack, I'd pull up and be able to shoot the breeze with him for a minute. And, you know, being a Seahawk fan, I was able to really kind of, you know, throw a couple darts his way.
Did you remind him of the 1 year he was in exile?
No, I didn't know that, actually.
He played for the Seahawks for 1 year.
Oh, that's right. He retired as a Hall of Famer with the Seahawks. Yeah, that's right.
Well, he was a Hall of Famer with the Steelers, but yeah.
I beg your pardon. Where did he retire?
Well, what jersey did he wear when he went in the Hall of Fame? All right. Starting to get ugly again. Sorry.
He said to himself, I want to go back home. I don't like Seattle. Get me back to Pittsburgh somehow.
So. It's like Joe Namath, LA Ram jersey, or Joe Montana, or Jerry Rice, you know, Jerry Rice unretired, yeah. Steve Largent's 80, you know, in 2005.
Oh, yeah,
it's weird to see certain players, you know, wearing other jerseys, and Franco Harris is definitely one of those.
I definitely think that's why I enjoy the 70s era and 80s era the most. I mean, you know, most of these guys stayed and played and retired with the same team. You know, it was definitely a lot easier to be loyal to players back then. Now you buy a jersey and, you know, you're wondering if 2 years from now they're even going to be on the team, you know. So.
If you're going to burn that jersey to make a point, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely invest more in the retired player jersey.
It's the truth, though, because, you know, if you look at some of the career spans of some of these guys playing, they're lucky they're playing one or two seasons. And, you know, the Tom Brady's, the Peyton Mannings, the Eli Mannings, they're few and far between, you know, and it seems to be mostly quarterbacks who survive the longest. But, you know, how many defensive linemen do you really know who played 14 seasons with the same team, so on and so forth. You know, it just doesn't happen. And then now you got the draft all over again. So now you got a all number one draft picks who are the second coming of, you know, Red Grange out there, you know, that they're going to change the teams and so on and so forth. A lot of these guys, look at a Johnny Manziel. I mean, what a wasted career. So, you know, I agree with you so much that I look at the cutoff date for me is basically 88, 89. I think once the 90s hit, the rent-a-player concept really moved into full throttle. And, you got to deal with it, but I just really don't like it. I do agree with you. 70s, 80s, 60s, there was a lot more of loyalty to a team. The team was loyal to its fans, so on and so forth. It was a much better situation than what we see today. And that's why, I think
owners were more loyal back then, too. I mean, it's being an owner nowadays, the money is...
That's really what it comes down to, you know?
The money is ruining.
Yeah, the insurance policies that these teams got to carry on these guys is just phenomenal. You know, for injuries and everything else. I mean, it just, you know, it skewed the game. It really has. So that's why, in a way, I was kind of hoping another league, you know, like a WFL, a USFL, whatever, would come out of the blue again, and we could see something, you know, some normalcy from years gone by. But I doubt seriously if that'll ever happen. But, no, I do agree with you. 70s and 80s, 60s for me, great time for, you know, for the game and the loyalties that were created in those games and so on, teams, so on and so forth. And your team basically really showed it, you know, 70s into the 80s. You know, incredible. Incredible.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, again, going back to Art Rooney, there's so many stories of things that he would do for players and, you know, how he treated them. You know, he was definitely a class act. I think his son was,
yep,
too. I mean, definitely a class organization. I mean, some of the things that have happened lately don't make you as proud, but, I mean, I'm still definitely proud to be a Steeler fan. I always will. I wear my stuff with pride wherever I go.
Nice.
The issues with the Packers over the past season with McCarthy going and
right,
Rodgers, you know, with the Rodgers issue, the articles that came out. And I talked to a bunch of my contacts while that whole period was going. I had heard that the article was coming out, and I was getting debriefed on it. And I was told, you know, make sure you're sitting down when you read this thing, because a lot of the stuff we said is true and even more. And it just, I was just shocked by some of the stuff because, you know, in actuality, McCarthy was a relatively good coach. Rodgers is a very good quarterback. But you know what? You got to have some chemistry, and at the same time, you got to have chemistry. You're grown men. You got to, you know, swallow your pride once in a while, and then you got to, you know, got to go 110% if you want to win the game, type of thing. So it becomes really, you know, he said she said type of thing, and it was ridiculous. I mean, it made the Packers look like fools reading that with the animosity
same
between
thing
those two guys.
Antonio Brown situation. You know, I mean, here's a guy Yeah, it was a six-round draft. Yeah, they gave up, you know, they let two other quality wide receivers go to give him the money, and then, you know, 4 or 5 years later, he just turns around and burns them, you know. It's just,
yep,
it's ridiculous.
Yep. It is.
Definitely.
It is. Hey, while we're down to about 8 minutes, I'd like to find out from you, Mike, if you got any advice for somebody who wants to collect cards and football memorabilia. I ask every guest that question, and we've gotten over the years some very, very interesting responses. So I throw it out to you. What do you think? What's your advice for any beginning collectors?
My best advice is just collect what you like. Collect what's a passion. Don't be in it for the money. Because especially now with modern day cards, I mean, you know, people look at it as an investment, and then they turn around and they're, you know, 5 years later, they're worth nothing. I mean, you know, collect it for the memories, and don't worry about getting the gem mint or the graded card. I mean, I have quite a few graded cards in my collection, but, you know, I also have some cards that are in not the greatest shape, but, you know, they complete my collection. You know, it's the memories for me. It's not, you know, I mean, if I die someday and my daughter wants to sell my collection and she makes some money off of it, you know, more power to her. But, you know, it's the memories for me. I still have, you know, you talked about if I have things that, you know, that other than Steelers. I have a Lou Alcindor rookie card that I remember getting from a flea market for like 5 cents. And it looks like somebody, you know, ran it through the washing machine. But as a kid, I thought, here I put one over on this guy because he probably didn't realize that was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And I, you know, I thought for 5 cents, I've got a memory that, you know, I've held on to for 40 years. And whether it's worth, you know, $800 like a mint one would be worth, or, you know, or a high graded one, or whether it's worth, you know, 10 cents, it's still it's still a memory, and I still look at it, and I enjoy it, and, you know, I can still remember finding it, you know. It's just, that to me is what collecting's about, the memories and the enjoyment. You know, it's not about the dollars and cents.
No, that's a great philosophy to have.
As a Steelers fan and me as a Seahawks fan, I have a couple of speed round questions I'd like to ask you. This is just multiple choice. Just shout out your answer. Let me know when you're ready.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right. Terrible towel or 12th man?
Terrible towel.
I would disagree with you on that one.
All the proceeds go to charity.
That's actually pretty cool. I didn't know that. Let's move along here.
Okay.
Next question.
Chuck Knoll, even though they get confused a lot of times, even though Chuck Knoll was definitely a better coach.
I would agree with you on that one, even though, I would agree with you. Okay, you ready? Number three. These are getting a little more complicated.
Okay.
Legion of Boom or Steel Curtain?
Oh, Steel Curtain for sure. But I do like defense. I will have to say I like the Legion of Boom also, but Steel Curtain for sure.
I don't remember the Steel Curtain shutting out another team 55-8 in a Super Bowl, but all right, we'll go with your answer.
I seem to remember them going 9 straight games and giving up 27 points, though, total. But
That's true.
Spoken like a loyal Steelers fan. You know, how few football people know that the Steel Curtain gave up 27 points in 9 games. That's pretty cool. Good stat, man. I like that. All right, last one, and this one's worth 5 points for whatever that's worth. Lynn Swann or Steve Largent?
Oh, gosh. Lynn Swann, just the gracefulness, but Steve Largent had a better career. The numbers are definitely different in the 70s passing-wise, but as far as body control and grace, I don't think he can outdo Lynn Swann. But as far as a human being, I don't think he can outdo Steve Largent. So that's a close
one. You're correct. It was Steve Largent. Steve Largent was the correct answer.
There goes my chance to get a Lynn Swann autograph, but...
No, we'll work it out for you. No, don't worry about it.
All right.
Nice. Thanks for having a sense humor. That's it. That's all I got, question wise.
All right.
We're almost out of time, Mike. I really appreciate you being on, and I know you're looking forward to the next issue of Gridiron Greats, which will be our summer national issue, distributed the last week of July and also at the National Sports Collectors Convention, which is going to be in Rosemont outside of Chicago, Illinois, from the 31st to the 4th of August. So thank you for being on. I'm sure we'll be in touch beforehand. And some great memories about the Pittsburgh Steelers. I thank you for sharing them with our audience today.
All right. Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Mike. You've been great, man.
All right. Nice talking to you.
All right, 2-minute warning, and we're going to have a wrap-up. Joe, I'm going to hand it off to you. What did you learn on tonight's show?
I learned that not all Steeler fans are bad people. Some of them can be good human beings. And I had to write that down because I couldn't come up with
that was very eloquent.
Really classy. I love it. Good on you, Mike. I love it.
Seeing the pictures
of
the collection.
Spano's a Steeler fan, and he and I are friends, so obviously.
All right, we're down to 1 minute. His collection is incredible. Seeing some of the pictures of it were amazing and very, very well thought out. Well-displayed collection, and could show his passion for his Steelers. All right, we're almost out of time. This is our last show for April. We'll be back in May with a couple of shows. And until that time, we will I'll be talking to you again. If you don't subscribe to Gridiron Greats Magazine, check out our website at gridirongreatsmagazine.com for subscription and back issue information. Joe, thanks for being on, and we'll be talking in the future, and we'll be back next month. Take care.
Hey.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.